This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 20th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 165 and Merry Christmas. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. And the big deal feature. Finally, charges in the BC legislature corruption scandal. Journalism professor Sean Holman joins me to analyze how the press gallery in Victoria got this one wrong. And pollster Mario Canseco looks at Christmas trends and some of the big stories in 2020 that will help shape 2021. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or are you glad it's Christmas time? A time to hum and sing songs like this one, a 1959 Rodgers and Hammerstein classic that goes a little like this. Doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodles, wild geese that fly with the moon on their wings. These are a few of my favorite things. Snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into springs. These are a few of my favorite things. 2020 has been a challenging year when we've been deprived of a few of our favorite things, or we've relied on the few favorite things within our grasp in order to just get by. What are mine? Friends, family, people that listen to this podcast or read my words, the West Coast air, land, and sea, a charter of rights with freedom of thought and freedom of the press. Politicians and corporate bigwigs making bad decisions, proving that truth is stranger than fiction. They're an endless source of stories to tell. But truth be told, I wish there were fewer, because that would mean we'd have a better government and better society. The power of sport to entertain and to enlighten, art and science, science and art, and hope. Hope. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, everything that is done in this world is done by hope. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas. Hope for health and hope for happiness. Hope for a better 2021. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, Chinese residents and businesses hit by power cuts during cold winter. Zhejiang, Hunan, and Jiangxi provinces in mainland China have issued orders to limit the usage of electricity, as streetlights were dimmed and some factories were told to work only once every 4 days. The power shortage could be linked to China's ban on Australian coal, as ties between the two nations have recently deteriorated. The National Development and Reform Commission had earlier notified 10 electricity companies not to buy coal from Australia. Zhejiang is home of Yiwu, a city known for factories and trade fairs. In the Taiwan news, Air China cries foul at Taiwan test results labeled Wuhan pneumonia. The notice, which was directed at agents, stated the following. Remind passengers and related travelers that the relevant testing project is aimed at the 2019 novel coronavirus, COVID-19. If the word Wuhan pneumonia appears on the test report, it will be deemed invalid and will directly affect the passenger's itinerary and customs clearance. Please be sure to inform passengers of this requirement. Since the beginning of October, the Chinese government has stipulated that passengers who take flights from Taiwan to China must provide a negative nucleic acid test certificate. Despite the fact the virus started in Wuhan, the communist country's leaders early on in the pandemic said references to the geographic origin of the virus were taboo. ABC News Australia, Russia's watered-down ban over doping probe described as a blow to clean sport. The World Anti-Doping Agency wanted a 4-year ban from all sport for tampering with data about systemic doping in Russia. The 3-person panel, led by Australian Mark Williams, reduced the ban to 2 years in a 186-page finding that remains confidential. Russian athletes not implicated in doping or covering up positive tests will be allowed to compete at next year's Olympics, the 2022 Winter Games, and FIFA's 2022 World Cup. They will compete as neutral athletes from Russia, but the Russian flag and Russian anthem we'll both be banned.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, TriMet General Manager Doug Kelsey will retire in March. His successor will have a full plate. TriMet has seen ridership crater during the COVID-19 pandemic. Kelsey will retire after his three-year contract expires, and he plans to return to Vancouver, BC. He was given a $400,000 golden parachute from BC Rapid Transit Company after a 2015 house cleaning at TransLink. Coincidentally, Kevin Desmond, an import from Seattle, is set to leave TransLink in February 2021. Czech news. Fish farms near Campbell River to be phased out over next 18 months. Feds. The government said that the area will only be licensed for the next 18 months and no new fish of any size may be introduced into Discovery Island's facilities during this period. All farms are required to be free of fish by June 30, 2022, but existing fish at the sites can complete their growth cycle and be harvested. The feds say they want to transition out of open net salmon farming on the BC coast by 2025. In the Seattle Times, prepare for war. A local GOP official goes all in with election conspiracy theories. Washington's Republican House and Senate leaders and Secretary of State, Kim Wyman, are all moderates. Meanwhile, the representative for Granite Falls, Robert Sutherland, declared on Facebook, quote, prepare for war. Joe Biden is not now nor will ever be my president, end quote. Danny Westneat writes that Sutherland received donations to his re-election campaign from Boeing, Associated General Contractors, the Puyallup Tribe, and others. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The disgraced former clerk of British Columbia's Legislative Assembly has been charged criminally. Craig James appeared in Victoria Provincial Court December 18th to face four counts of breach of trust and two counts of fraud over $5,000. His next court date is January 27th. The charges come after more than 2 years of an RCMP investigation. They were approved by Special Prosecutors David Butcher and Brock Martland. It is a vindication for Daryl Plekis, who was the 39th Speaker of the BC Legislature, and his Chief of Staff, Alan Mullen. They called in the RCMP, but faced a torrent of criticism from members of the BC Legislative Press Gallery after James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz were suspended on November 20, 2018. Andrew Weaver, who was the leader of the BC Greens at the time, tweeted, there are many members of the BC Legislative Press Gallery and past and present House leaders who owe a sincere and public apology to Mullen and Plekis. Thank you, Daryl and Alan, for providing a beacon of ethical leadership. Sean Holman is a professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary. He is a former member of the Victoria Press Gallery. He joins me on the Breaker.News podcast. I asked Sean Holman if he agreed with Weaver's assessment.
I'm not sure necessarily whether I would be looking for an apology. What instead I would really like to see, that I have yet to see, is some kind of public explanation and self-reflection for what happened. Why were individuals so skeptical about what Daryl Plekis and Alan Mullen had to say? Why was there not more credibility and credence given to the allegations that they were making? And why was there so much of an appearance of favoritism towards Craig James? I think those are legitimate questions, and questions that would be really helpful, I think, for the people who are down there at the time to reflect on. I'm not a big believer in blame per se, but I do feel that when we could have done better, and I'm talking about the media, we do owe it to the public to explain how we could have done better and why we did better. And that's what I would like to see.
Yeah, a decade ago, you were in the press gallery reporting for Public Eye Online. Dermot Travis was in his early days with Integrity BC. Dermot, of course, left us earlier this year. This would have been a day that he would have been very, very satisfied, very happy. Both of you did work in the early days, uncovering the stories, focusing the attention on these two offices in this institution, the seat of government, which in British Columbia is still cloaked in a lot of secrecy, a lot of lack of accountability. It's really an anachronism, but you were fighting the good fight as well, Dermot fighting the good fight in order to bring some sunlight and to show the public what was going on there and to put those in charge to account.
Yeah, and the story of that is why there should have probably been more credence given to the allegations that Darryl Plekis and Ellen Mullen were making. You know, what Dermot and I learned very early on was that when Craig James was at Elections BC, was the acting head of Elections BC, he racked up a rather large travel bill during the time that he was there, $43,000, in fact. And those expenses included the cost of James and his wife taking a business trip to Africa, and later for him to stay at an exclusive private club in Washington, D.C., as well as an Arizona resort. This should have been an indication that, regardless of how anyone felt about Craig James, that maybe there might have been something to what Darryl Plekis was saying. And again, I think there really is a need to think about why there was such a lack of willingness to sort of explore those allegations in a little bit of a deeper way. And I get it. It's understandable. Craig James is a longtime fixture in the legislature. People know him. Some people quite liked him. So I get that there would be some uncomfortability about that. We also have professional responsibilities, and those professional responsibilities need to be met. Regardless of what position we're in, whether that means we're members of the media or whether or not we're politicians, we're all representing the public trust in some kind of way. And I think it's time for us to have some more reflection on the culture at the legislature, the chumminess at the legislature that sometimes exists. And again, that's to a certain extent understandable. People make friends, but at the same time, we need to sort of take a look at the failure that happened.
And here we are on the doorstep of 2021. This will play itself out in the courts throughout 2021. Craig James' next appearance will be January 27th in court. It could take a while before this actually gets to trial. One thing that was promised back in early 2019, when there was pressure by the independent officers of the legislature, including the Information Privacy Commissioner, was promised as a result of that pressure by Mike Farnworth, the House Leader of the NDP, was to finally add the legislature to the Freedom of Information Protection and Privacy Act. That hasn't happened yet. Do you think now there's going to be more pressure on the NDP to do that?
I would hope so, but again, that will also relate to the willingness of the media to put pressure on these issues. And I think it's important that the media does do that, not just around freedom of information, but some of the other recommendations that Darryl Plekis has made as he has exited his office. He's made, for example, some recommendations on how the speaker could be elected in the future in a way that will ensure more independence, the kind of independence that allowed for these revelations to come out, these allegations to come out. So I think that these reforms should happen, but it will be really up to the media to put pressure on politicians to ensure that they do happen.
And you were part of the Canadian COVID-19 Accountability Group, an ad hoc group which was focusing on two things that were needed more than ever during this this public health crisis, during this pandemic: more transparency, as well as whistleblower protection. And those are two themes that Daryl Plekis was focused on, including the whistleblower protection. There are a couple dozen people whose voices haven't yet been heard. They've been very careful. They've been probably waiting for this day to happen because they wanted to know that someone was listening, someone was watching, and someone's going to do something about it. Maybe those people will be strong enough now to go public. But at the same time, that's another gap here in British Columbia. The NDP did put whistleblower protection in government ministries, but they didn't put it into the legislature and other arms of the government. That's another gap that needs to be dealt with here.
Yeah, and it's still an abysmal piece of legislation, really. This does come down to transparency issues. This does come down to, issues of openness versus secrecy. And, again, it really is incumbent upon the news media to raise these kinds of issues and not just treat it as an inside the beltway issue, not just treat it as an issue that's only of interest to journalists and opposition politicians. It should be an issue of interest to the public as well, because when there isn't transparency, when there isn't openness, then the problem is that there will be situations like what we saw today.
That was Sean Holman, professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary. It's the end of the year as we know it, and for that, we should feel fine. Pollster Mario Canseco is president of Research Co., and he joins me on the Breaker.News podcast. Mario helps me look back at some of the big stories of 2020, but first, it's looking a lot like Christmas.
You've got a Christmas break poll. You're looking at 2020 being a year of no travel, no socializing, but working from home. What did people tell you in that poll as they come to the end of the year and as they come to a Christmas that will be like no other, very few Christmas gatherings because of the pandemic?
So we've been asking this question for the past couple of years, and we usually get what we thought was a high number of Canadians who said that the holiday season was going to be more stressful than fun. It's either because you're traveling, you're having to host a lot of people, maybe spending an evening with somebody you don't want to chat with. And now that we can't do any of those things, that is when the stress is actually hitting us because of the fact that we're facing this pandemic. And we have 37% of Canadians who expect the holidays this year to be more stressful than fun. It's usually a number that goes somewhere between 20 and 25%. So to have more than one third saying, I am stressed about this, and it's not because I have to have a holiday gathering, it's not because I have to catch planes, it's not because I have to do anything that's out of the ordinary. It's because we haven't dealt with this pandemic in a way that is satisfactory. And, when we look at the situation that we have in places like Australia or New Zealand, I think a lot of Canadians are stressed out because they can't do all of the things that our own counterparts in those countries can actually do in this holiday season.
This has been a year of protests and counter-protests. Early on, it was Shut Down Canada. There was Black Lives Matter, of course. There were anti-mask rallies, anti-vaccine rallies, people that were wanting to stop the lockdowns and get back to work for economic reasons.
I think there's a couple of different challenges for the two countries in North America. For Canada, I think it's primarily figuring out a way to deal with reconciliation with First Nations. It was one of the major promises of the Justin Trudeau campaign back in 2015. It hasn't really materialized in a way that is satisfactory for anybody. In spite of the fact that we have some of these token gestures from the government, we continue to see a lot of First Nations who are dissatisfied with the way things are going and who would like to see something different from the federal government on issues such as, running water. That is one of the key ones. It hasn't been met, partly because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but even if the pandemic hadn't hit, this is something that really would not have been successful as an effort from the government. So that is one of the major aspects that I think will continue. We are bound to see some of these protests about masks and everything else, but these ones are different because this is something that the government actually promised. In the U.S., I think what will be interesting to see is what happens with the Black Lives Matter movement, what happens with the situations related to defunding police now that we're going to have a new president who is a Democrat, who is not going to be such a polarizing figure as Donald Trump. It's not something that is going to work itself magically. I think there's a lot of systemic issues in the United States that need to be dealt with, and it's going to be important for whoever is in charge of this file from the White House or at the White House to handle it differently than Donald Trump. But it's not something that is going to be as easily solved as just two or three speeches here or there. So, you know, definitely challenges that call for government action on both sides of the 49th barrel.
If you take the McDonald's slogan of millions and millions served, Justin Trudeau's slogan might be billions and billions served after his emergency benefit scheme for Canadians who needed the money. And unfortunately, some Canadians who didn't need the money also took the money. And then, of course, the WE scandal, another ethics scandal for Justin Trudeau. That story has not been fully finished. Now, that tarnished his comeback. That caused a lot of problems in the summertime after that employment program for youth went off the rails and became subject of allegations of cronyism and even corruption. What do you think of Justin Trudeau's fortunes this year and going into 2021 when there could be an election?
Well, without the WE scandal, I think we probably would have seen something similar to what we experienced here in British Columbia, the opportunity to topple the government by yourself, have an election against an leader of the opposition who wasn't particularly popular, and maybe get that majority the same way John Horgan did. The WE scandal definitely brought back some memories to the forefront. It made residents feel a little bit uneasy about the way things were being handled by Justin Trudeau. In the middle of the situation that he had, which is the number of residents of Canada who were satisfied with the way the COVID-19 pandemic was handled by the federal government was certainly steady, but his numbers weren't really that great at the time. Now it starts to trend a little bit upwards. His own rating is at 55%, which is the highest that he's had all year. And also we have a situation related to the connection that needs to be established by the leader of the opposition. We haven't seen Erin O'Toole climb the charts. You know, roughly one third of Canadians are happy with the way he's doing things. But there's also a third of Canadians who don't know who he is. So this is definitely problematic for the Conservatives. There's a lot of people who might vote Conservative because that is how they feel ideologically. But he's not really connecting outside of the base. His numbers are usually better in Alberta, Manitoba, and Saskatchewan, where they already have the seats. So if you're looking for a way to try to form a minority government as a Conservative leader, you need to go into Ontario, you need to go into BC a little bit deeper. And it's not something that is happening right now for them. And for the NDP, we continue to see Jagmeet Singh's numbers a little bit higher than the rest of the leaders of the opposition when it comes to his own favorability. The numbers for the NDP are now at 20%, so it's a little bit higher than what they're used to having under Jagmeet Singh, but not yet at the level that the party enjoyed under Jack Layton and Tom Mulcair. So lots of work to be done there as well.
There were new restrictions, especially to do with Surrey and the explosion of cases in Surrey and the amount of deaths that followed as well. And British Columbia, which was a star in the spring, is not a star anymore in the fall. And the star has fallen, and there's a lot of tragedy out there. Do you think that this could be the defining moment of John Horgan's career if British Columbia cannot find a way to flatten the curve and get back ahead of other provinces and other states and save lives? Because right now it's looking pretty dire.
Well, it's the kind of thing that can happen. I think there's an expectation from a lot of politicians and those who help them that once the vaccine is here, everything is going to be a little bit easier, probably 6 months, a year, everything will be back to normal. And then you can start to concentrate on the economic recovery. I think that's the plan for a lot of political leaders right now, trying to weather the storm and ensure that we can come back a little bit stronger. The main problem, I think, has been that the level of support for the government at the start of the pandemic was obscenely high. It was higher than 80%. Now it's dropping more into the 60% level. So you still have a majority of residents who seem to be satisfied. But there's definitely a situation here that we didn't experience before. You look at Ontario, you look at Quebec, they used to have thousands of cases every day, then it dropped, now it's back to thousands of cases. But here in British Columbia, we went for months without more than 200, 300 cases a day. And now we're heading into days where we have 500, 700, 600. It's making people think twice about what is happening and the ways in which we can contain this. But ultimately, I think part of the situation that he has right now in his advantage is the fact that the opposition is not really where it should be. They're searching for a new leader after the election. The decision to call the election at the time they did certainly worked out, and they have a majority mandate now. But I think they will be judged more on the economic recovery that comes out of this pandemic, especially if we look at other provinces that are able to bounce back stronger and you don't have the same types of job losses. Comparing province to province is going to be crucial for those who want to figure out if the NDP should get another kick at the can 4 years from now.
And now we know that in 2021, the budget will be delayed by 2 months from February into April. It seems a lot of transparency and accountability mechanisms are the collateral damage of the pandemic. And I think a lot of British Columbians might be wondering, will it ever return to the way it was before? Or is the system broke? Or will this be an opening for the BC Liberals if they can reformat themselves, get some new blood in there, get rid of their corrupt recent past, and find a path that is acceptable to British Columbians?
Well, I think the key to the exercise here is going to be figuring out a way to connect with voters in a more meaningful manner. You know, we've had criticisms of governments who behaved in similar ways in the past, particularly at the federal level when Stephen Harper was in Ottawa. And, you know, even though we had a lot of dismay from the way in which they were behaving on specific files and the way they were treating specific people when it came to things they were doing, we didn't have a reaction that led to the loss of the party in maybe 2008. You know, it's a different type of mentality in that way if you can't establish that emotional connection. And going back to 2011, you know, it's an election that is triggered by the behavior of the government itself, and it ends up with a majority mandate for the government that was toppled. It was, you know, kind of strange, but it's the kind of thing that happens when you can't establish that emotional connection. And I think the problem for the BC Liberals, particularly in the campaign, was that they were working with a playbook that was already old, you know, trying to talk about the 1990s, when a lot of voters who were voting for the first or second time in this election weren't really alive when the NDP was in power. Quite a complex manner to do things. And figuring out a way to connect with the base is not going to lead you to great success. I think part of the problem with the Liberals is they lost some of the brain trust that helped them win elections, and were running a campaign which was essentially a B team that was particularly nasty on social media to anybody who dared to criticize them. And sadly, they're continuing to behave in the same fashion after the election was over. So unless you learn from those mistakes and try to establish an emotional connection with voters, whoever the leader is, then it's not going to be easy to topple a government that, for all of its faults, continues to be seen as a good government when it comes to handling COVID.
Our biggest neighbor will have a new leader, and some of the biggest challenges he'll face are on the global scene with China and Russia.
Well, what we've seen over the past few years is Republican presidents tend to do very well with conservative voters in Canada. George W. Bush was not particularly popular, but you had a lot of Republicans, a lot of federal conservatives in Canada who said, oh, no, he's a good president. I think I like what he's doing. They used to have very positive views on John McCain, on Mitt Romney. We don't see the same kind of thing with Trump. You know, there's definitely a low vocal minority of people who vote conservative, most of them in Alberta, who are happy to have Donald Trump at the White House. So, you know, the fact that Donald Trump was defeated is definitely good news for a lot of Canadians. But we're heading into a situation where the expectations about what Joe Biden is going to do are enormous, particularly on the energy file. You know, there's a lot of discussions about what is going to happen with specific pipeline projects. Is he going to embrace renewable energy in a different way than the Trump White House? And what is going to happen with all of the bilateral relationships? So, you know, there is an expectation that things are going to get better. We'll see if this animosity that right now Canadians have about the United States is based on Trump, is based on the fact that they are not dealing with COVID-19 as successfully as we are. But the issue with China is definitely significant because it definitely plays a role in other decisions that we have to make. We consistently tracked the animosity from most Canadians to the idea of Huawei playing a role in the development of the 5G network. That is a problem that will continue. And it's not a situation where the views of Canadians on Russia or China have ever been good. I think it's more about the fact that their behavior over the past 2 years is making people have even more negative views than they had before. You know, we went from a situation where most Canadians said, well, I kind of don't like China and Russia, to I definitely am not happy with the way they have been behaving, and I'm not having a favorable view of them. So it's tough to tell what is going to happen there, because, as you said, you know, this isn't the kind of thing that can be changed at the ballot box. Something that was done in the United States in spite of all of the protests from some of the Republican voters. But it's definitely something that needs to continue. It's not an issue that we can ignore.
That was Mario Canseco, president of Research Co.
Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all of those who will be working on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, the essential service workers of British Columbia, especially the frontline health workers. A special salute to those who are treating patients with coronavirus. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 20th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 20th in 1946, the Frank Capra-directed Christmas classic It's a Wonderful Life was released? Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Merry Christmas. All I Want for Christmas Is You by the YVR Pop Choir. Find it on Chorus Studio on YouTube. Until next week.